You know, there are some people I really, really like at this radio station.
Uh-oh. If it starts like that, the second half of this statement is not going to be very nice.
And there are some things that some people do that just... You know what, Oren? I'm not mad.
Just disappointed,
Chris?
I'm
just disappointed.
You have a very disappointed tone right now. I don't know who disappointed you, but...
I am incredibly disappointed right now.
Someone has definitely disappointed you, sir.
It is Chris Thomas, the Night Turtle, with you till 10. Wow. So I was getting ready for our next segment here. We're going to hear from J.C. Treader and David Sampson, who joined us earlier on this decision for them to all step down in what's an upheaval of the NFLPA. And as I was scrolling Twitter, making sure I didn't miss anything, I saw this from our very own The Morning Shift account on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, at 92.9 Morning Shift. And again, this is why it's really important to make sure you follow not only all the hosts, but now we all have our own show pages. So make sure, again, at 929 Morning Shift is for The Morning Shift. Duh. My page is at CT Tonight 929 for Chris Thomas Tonight. CT Tonight 929. So make sure you go check that out. So I guess Dylan has been taking his crack, the producer of The Morning Shift and host of The Hometown Take, at doing some lists. Now, there is an art form to doing a list in sports talk radio. I grew up in New York, moved here to Atlanta. I've listened to many, many lists over the years as an avid P1, as they say, listener to both WFAN in New York, where I grew up, and, of course, now here to 92.9 The Game. I listen to the station all day long. I try to listen as much as I can. This, Oren, if you want to write a headline, is one of the worst takes I've ever seen at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
That is a bold statement. Lord knows we've had some takes.
We've had some doozies, and some lately that just make me shake their head as well. So he did, I can't even believe this, a top five breakfast cereal list. There are three that are acceptable, two that are just blatantly not, don't deserve to be on the list, and it's a travesty that they are. And his number two pick, to me, is awful. His number five is okay. It probably makes the most sense out of any pick on this list. And four and three are just an abomination, Oren. So let's get one thing straight. And I guarantee you this is part of what tripped Dylan up. Oren, there is no planet, Earth included, where eating cereal for breakfast is a healthy choice. I don't care if it's Special K. I don't care if it's Honey Nut Cheerios. I don't care if it's regular Cheerios.
Nothing with some bran or some oats?
No, Raisin Bran. You might as well eat a milkshake.
Shredded wheat.
All it has is sugar on top of it. Oren.
There's got to be some like decently healthy cereals out there, right?
Yeah, Bran Flakes, which is basically what your grandparents ate at 80 years old to stay continent. I mean, that's essentially what you're doing. Because, guys and ladies and gentlemen, one of the great myths out there is that any cereal couldn't be healthy. All cereal is a grand, delicious mixture of carbohydrates and sugar. That's all that it is. And it's delicious. And if you try to make it anything else other than that, you're playing yourself.
Uh-oh.
You're playing yourself.
Congratulations, you played yourself.
You played yourself. Go eat a banana. Go eat some fruit. Go cook up some eggs. Go have some sugar-free oatmeal if you want to have a healthy breakfast, okay? But if you have breakfast cereal, that's no better than having French toast with ice cream on top of it. It's the same thing. It's just carbohydrates and sugar. So one of the grand myths out there, Oren, is that breakfast cereal, if done a certain way, can be healthy. It's not. And don't try to make it out to be. Or if I'm going to have a bowl of cereal, I'm going to have a bowl of damn cereal. Like, if that's like say having a bowl of cereal for breakfast is like saying, I'm going to go to McDonald's and eat a healthy lunch. Why would you do that? If you're craving McDonald's, just eat McDonald's and get it out of the way. That's my strategy anyway. Whatever works for you. Different strokes for different folks. If I'm craving something and I try to like circumvent it, it doesn't work. Like if I'm craving a bowl of ice cream, Oren, and I say, well, I'm going to have a fruit popsicle, or I'm going to have a diet, 60 calorie, tastes like shredded paper, focaccia ice cream sandwich. It's not going to work. Just have the ice cream and move on. Keep it moving. And that's how I feel about breakfast cereal. If I'm craving breakfast cereal, just have the bowl of breakfast cereal. If you think Raisin Bran is healthy, go look at the nutrition facts. Please. Look how many carbs and how much sugar is in a bowl of Raisin Bran.
It's a lot. They're coated in sugar.
That's all that it is. You think Corn Pops are a healthy alternative? You are sorely mistaken. And then the obvious ones, Lucky Charms, Fruity Pebbles, Captain Crunch, those ones don't even try. But the deceitful ones, Oren, are like Kashi Go Crunch, Wheaties, Honey Bunches of Oats, Honey Nut Cheerios. Those are sneaky because they try to make you think that what you're eating is semi-healthy. It's healthier than getting, I don't know, 6 strips of bacon at a breakfast buffet. Sure. But is it healthy compared to 2 scrambled eggs and a packet of sugar-free oatmeal? No. Is it as healthy as a banana? No. Or an apple? No. It's not. So Dylan, roundabout way to say, Dylan erred in his list, Oren, by trying to include what I would consider 2 healthier cereals. You ready for the list?
I'm ready. I have it pulled up, but I'm also ready for it.
Number 5, and again, I think this was his best selection out of the 5.
Okay.
Cocoa Puffs. I'm down with that. Cocoa Puffs is a yummy cereal. And the best part, Oren, if you agree with this or not, is the milk after the Cocoa Puffs.
Oh, it's always the milk, yes.
Delicious. Here's where he starts to go real, real stupid dumb. Honey Nut Cheerios at number 4. Really, Dylan? Really? Honey Nut Cheerio? Out of every cereal option that's available, you could have gone Lucky Charms, Fruity Pebbles, Frosted Mini Wheats, Frosted Flakes, Raisin Bran, Rice Krispie cereal.
My kid loves Honey Nut Cheerios, but I don't think you need to put Honey Nut Cheerios on this list, no.
No. Out of all the ones I just named, by the way, none of those are on this list.
Oh, all have great-tasting milk, by the way, too.
Exactly. Number 3... This is where I just, like, the scene from Newsroom where you just throw the papers up in the air and just say, screw it.
What's going on?
No, Trix is number 3. Trix is, not only does Trix not deserve to be number 3, it's not even good. Trix, to me, is not a good-tasting cereal.
You mentioned before about the sugar and carbohydrates. Like, if there was just a quintessential, cereal that when you ate it, you knew 100% that there was no nutritional value at all in any bite you're getting ready to take. It was tricks, man. Like, you could at least fake it with Cheerios. You couldn't fake it at all.
Oh, no, not at all. And it's not good. Like, it's not even good. Like, Fruity Pebbles is good. Lucky Charms is very good. Frosted Flakes is my favorite cereal. Not on this list. Number 2, Oren. Extremely controversial pick for me. Reese's Puffs, in theory.
I've never eaten that cereal before in my life.
In theory, should be amazing, right? You would think chocolate, peanut butter, cereal, Reese's filling. What could go wrong? Everything. One, it tastes absolutely nothing like Reese's Puffs. Like, literally not. If it had a blank name on the box, Oren, and they said, tell me what cereal or what candy bar, chocolate bar, this is supposed to be. It would take you 10 guesses to get to Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Because it tastes absolutely nothing like it. Not even close. Second part about Reese's Puffs. much like Captain Crunch, which also could have been on this list, it cuts the roof of your mouth. It's not a pleasant cereal to eat. You have to wait till it gets a little soggy first before you even eat it. Because it has that texture where it just cuts up the roof of your mouth.
Huh.
So I don't even like Reese's. Reese's peanut butter cups are my favorite candy, but I don't even like Reese's Puff cereal. And then number one's a good choice. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. That's not really debatable. But the rest of this list is just absolute trash. It really is. And Dylan, I expect better from you. I know you're better than this. For you to come up with a list that has Honey Nut Cheerios at number four.
It's the honey of an oat.
No. Trix at number three and Reese's honey Puffs Cheerios at number two. My man, you fumbled the bag hard on this one. I hope. I got to go back and listen because, I didn't know about this until a minute ago when I saw it come up on my feed. I hope Allie, Mike, and Bo had a field day with this. I really hope that they did. And if they didn't, they need to because this thing is a travesty. It's an abomination. It really is. Dylan, from me to you, brother.
Buy better cereal.
Do better. Just be better. Like, there's really no other way to put it. Just be better. You are better. I know you're better, and you need to be better. All right, 404-726-0929. Real quick, let's hear from J.C. Treader. Let's pay off this teaseroo here. Oh, let's hear him talking about his decision. Again, he went on the Dan Patrick show earlier today. He talked about his decision to step away as the president of the NFLPA.
Yeah, I feel like I had nothing left to give the organization. I feel like as a player, I sacrificed the back end of my career and I sacrificed time with my family. And I did those for the players and I would do them again. I love working for the players. In the last 5 weeks, I feel like I've had to sacrifice my public reputation. There's been some stories out there about me that aren't true. And I've been asked to sit on that and not talk about it. And that was for the organization. That wasn't for the players. And in the end, I feel like I couldn't do that anymore. I've always said the only thing I've ever wanted to care about was being a great dad and a great husband. And once this job wasn't fun anymore or hurt my family, I was out. And it happened both of those at the same time. And it was time for me to leave.
Okay. But here's the problem, Mo. Why did those things happen? Why did your family and yourself get scrutinized? Because you, sir, screwed up in a major way and tried to be a sneaky about it. And you know what? You got caught. You got caught, dude, with your pants down. Sorry, buddy. I have no empathy for that dude whatsoever. None. He screwed up. If he was an innocent bystander in this situation, he would have been the next executive director. That's the ironic part about it. But not only did he not do anything about it, he was in on it. And that's the sad part about it. 404-726-0929. It'll be interesting to see what they do over the next coming days and weeks before the league really gets going here, how to clean up this giant mess on aisle one with their Players Association. Really interesting. All right, 404-726-0929. If you have a take on Dylan's awful cereal list, hit me up at CTTonight929. Coming up next, Hawks had a great summer league, and they've had a great offseason. What's next for them? We'll talk with Trevor Lane of Front Office Sports, and of the Lakers Nation podcast. We'll talk all things NBA with him. Don't go anywhere. Chris Thomas Tonight with you till 10. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas Tonight, Turtle, with you till 10 o'clock. Jason Longshore comes your way then with Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Ooh, Atlanta United. I spoke with him last night. Oren, yikes. They are in a bad, bad way right now. We'll see if they can try to salvage something out of this season. My goodness. But right now, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our buddy Trevor Lane of Front Office Show and Lakers Nation. Trevor, what do you make of what's going on in L.A., the other side of town with the Clippers? If this was a decade ago, I'd say they'd have a super team. But what about right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question this is an older Clippers team. But I think we have to remember the parameters that they're working within. This is a Clippers team that very much wants to try to maximize a window in the next year, maybe 2 years. And that's the window that they're looking at right now. It's not so much about trying to win for the next 4 years or 5 years. And given those parameters, I think they've done a pretty nice job stacking up talent and finding some pieces. Bradley Beal coming in, Chris Paul coming in. Now, these are older players. The way I look at this team is that the floor is potentially very low with this team because of the injury risk, the potential for injury due to having so many older players. But again, they have very, very clean books starting in 2027 and maybe even a bit of flexibility starting in 2026. So I think they've done a nice job knowing that they're going to undergo significant changes in the near future of finding pieces that can help them potentially at least have a shot right now, whether it's this year or next year. So I give them a lot of credit. It may not work. Like I said, I think the floor is very low with a team like this, but the ceiling is also high, and that's all you can ask for when you've got a talent like Kawhi Leonard, you've got James Harden, you've got these guys that frankly deserve to get another shot or two at really doing something.
What do you think of the couple of moves that the Lakers have made in the past recent weeks of adding Ayton and Smart to the roster?
You know, I think the Lakers have done, and I'm going to sound like a homer here, but I think they've done a phenomenal job when you really take into account what their goals were going into this offseason. Number one, they need to re-sign Luka Doncic. That is, or sign him to a contract extension. That is very clearly the most important thing for the Lakers, is to sign him to a contract extension. But Luka, assuming they do get that done, the next on the list will be to add a center. They did that with DeAndre Ayton, to add more defense on the perimeter. They did that with Marcus Smart, particularly after losing a player the caliber of Dorian Finney-Smith, the free agency. And they've done all of it. Jake LaRavia as well, I thought, was a really good addition for them, somebody that is underrated around the NBA that I think has real two-way potential in this league. And they've done all of it without giving up any of their trade assets. No future picks, nothing like that. They even moved up in the draft. I believe they were the only team to really move up significantly in the draft, 19 spots, without using any future draft capital to do it. So I think under those circumstances, they've done a pretty remarkable job of putting this team together. Does that mean they're good enough? No, I still think there are other things that need to happen in order to truly contend. And the Lakers understand that. They know they need more help on the perimeter defensively. They need to add more athleticism. But given the fact that they still have all of their powder dry on the trade front, I think they've done a pretty admirable job.
Do you think there's going to be buy-in from Ayton, considering the stars that he's now playing with?
Yeah, I think so. And you know what? Here's what I ultimately land at with DeAndre Ayton. And by the way, I heard recently from the Lakers that they're very excited about DeAndre Ayton, as they should be, but that they specifically believe that the Ayton they're going to get, and this is, again, directly from the Lakers, that they believe they're getting the Chris Paul Phoenix Suns version of DeAndre Ayton, that is what Luka will unlock, that's the player they're going to be seeing here this coming season. So this is, I think when we look at DeAndre Ayton, this is really his best shot to show his true self. And if he doesn't do it now, he's never going to, right? I mean, not only did he get exercised from that team in Portland, they sent him away, they bought him out ultimately, and there were some negative things written about him, and maybe they were all true. I'm not saying they weren't, but there was some negativity about him on the way out the door. Now he's with Luka in a contract year on the Lakers in the spotlight after the last destination had some bad things about him come out. If we were ever going to see a DeAndre Ayton, it's now. If it doesn't happen now, that's it. It is never going to happen. This is about as motivated as you can make a basketball player. So I am optimistic that we're going to see a very locked in DeAndre Ayton this season.
When it comes to Damian Lillard going home to Portland, do you see that as the signaling of him giving up? Is not the right phrase, but moving past the idea of his career probably ending with a ring?
Yes, probably. I mean, and you know what? There's some things, as much as we have, you know, rings culture and all of that, there are things that are more important than that. And Damian Lillard has spoken at length about being close to family. I do think the Blazers are on the rise. I think they made a real run last year that where they looked good during a stretch there. But most likely, they're not going to be winning a ring in the next 3 years. You never say never in this league, because who knows? This is a crazy league that we have. It's wonderful, but you never know what's going to happen. But most likely, this is Dame probably not winning a ring here in Portland. But again, everybody has their own values. Everybody has their own things that they're going to prioritize. And Damian Lillard is prioritizing being where he considers home in Portland, being close to family. And you know what? I applaud him for that. I think that's a wonderful thing that he's going to get to go finish his career where it started. And more importantly than that, he's going to get to be a bigger part of his family's life.
Kyle Filipowski wins the Summer League MVP, averaged almost 30 a contest. Do you foresee a bright future for him?
Yeah, I mean, he looked great in the Summer League. Now, I will caution that, and by the way, this is not trying to be negative about him, but in general, we have seen that there have been players in the past that have found success in Summer League that have not found success in the NBA. And I hope that's not the way this goes, but Summer League success does not necessarily equate to regular season NBA success. That said, Filipowski did look very good, and I only say that to pump the brakes on the notion that he's suddenly going to be an all-star or something like that. Maybe he does become that ultimately, but and I hope he does, but Summer League is not necessarily a rock-solid indicator of that. That said, he did look very good in Summer League. I think Utah has got an interesting young core that they've built, and if he does start to really take off from here, if he can use his Summer League performance, which was fantastic, as a springboard, then that will do a lot, I think, to speed up the whole rebuilding process in Utah. So you certainly can't complain about it if the Utah Jazz. Great to see. And I was a little bit underwhelmed with their summer overall in Utah. So I think this is a really nice boost for them, having a guy like Filipowski win Summer League MVP, and adds a little bit of optimism around the club.
Tyrese Haliburton goes on Pat McAfee shows. We're talking with our buddy Trevor Lane of Front Office Show and Lakers Nation. Make sure you give him a follow on all of those platforms, and says he believes that the rash of Achilles injuries in the NBA is bad luck. Are you on that side of the fence, or do you think there's something to all of these consecutive injuries we've seen?
No. So in terms of the number that we've seen in just this year, which I believe off the top of my head is we've seen 7 or 8 Achilles injuries. But again, that's me recalling that. So I could be a little bit off, but I believe it was 7 or 8. That number could be a bit of bad luck. Now, in general, we've seen an increase in those kinds of injuries, as well as we've seen some other injuries happen more frequently. I think that's because, you know, there's this idea out there that the NBA is soft, that it's not as physical as it was. And I would contend that it is just as physical as it used to be, if not more so. It's just in a different way. What's happened is the skill set, the skills of NBA players has diversified and increased in a way that we didn't see back in the day. You go watch a game from 20 years ago, and you look at how many players are camped in the paint. You look at how little movement there is, both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, compared to today with how much ground players have to travel. And we track this stuff. You can go in and you can look and see how much more players are expected to move in today's NBA. Then when we factor in how much quick twitch activity is required, how many times you are required now, rather than just jogging up down the court, to react in an instant and fly across the floor to close out on a shooter or stop on a dime and try to stay in front of your man. It is a lot of stop and go, quick activity, and that is going to lead to more injuries like this. Look, I'm not a doctor or anything like that, but I think it's pretty easy to see why we're seeing an uptick in those things. I do think the prevalence of specialization in sports from a young age is also a factor in all of this. When we look at players growing up and how many reps they've got on the basketball court when they do get to the NBA, all of these things tie in to a bigger topic of discussion for the NBA. But I don't think it's necessarily coincidence that we're seeing an increase in these injuries or simply bad luck. I do think it is reflective of the game that we've got today and the shift in the way physicality presents itself in today's NBA compared to the past. You may not have as many elbows flying on a night in, night out basis or something like that, but this is an incredibly physical and very, very taxing game. And I think it's reflective of that.
Here in Atlanta, Trevor, Kobe Bufkin had himself a really strong summer league series, but it's a little bit of a risk counting on him to be the backup guard for Trey, given his injury history. Do you think he showed enough for the Hawks to be comfortable giving him that role.
Yeah, you know what? I was really high on him in the draft last year. He was a guy that I had my eye on. And in a backup role, I think I am comfortable with that. Now, if it's not working out, I do think the Hawks will have the flexibility to go out there and find another player to be in that role. But when I look at what you've got guys who can be secondary playmakers, whether that's Jalen Johnson, whether that's Dyson Daniels. You've got other guys who can fill in as at least a secondary creator, even if they aren't a primary initiator in that offense. And I think overall Atlanta has had a really, really great offseason. And you've got to be willing to give these guys this opportunity. And if it's not working, again, I think that it would be different if they were lacking, say, at the wing position in a 3-and-D type of scenario and you had to go find that guy. But I think Atlanta's done a phenomenal job finding those types of players and especially winning the Nikhil Alexander Walker sweepstakes. There were a number of teams interested in him, most notably the Detroit Pistons were in on him. But I think should things not work out with Kobe Bufkin for whatever reason, it's not as difficult to pivot and go find a quality backup guard. I mean, there's literally guys out there right now on the market. When we talk about a Malcolm Brogdon, we talk about Russell Westbrook, players like that are still out there currently. So pivoting, if they do find that Kobe Bufkin is not ready for that, which I would be surprised. I think he is ready for it. But should they find themselves in that type of situation, it won't be that punitive. I don't think it'll be that costly to go find somebody to take over that role. So I think it's a worthwhile risk to take and one that, if for whatever reason it doesn't pan out, will not be that difficult to rectify.
Speaking of players, before I let you go, that are still on the market, do you think Al Horford still has any value?
Al Horford, yeah, absolutely. I think he can help the right team. I think not only is he just a quality veteran player, a floor spacer, can shoot the three, but what I love about Al Horford and his fit in a lot of different places, he's very heavily linked to Golden State. I think he would be a phenomenal fit there, but he's a ball mover. He is a ball mover on the offensive end. He knows where the ball needs to go. He knows where the pass needs to run to, and he just reads the game at a veteran level. Is he going to play 82 games? No, but if you have Al Horford on your team in the postseason, you're going to be glad that you've got him. So I think Al Horford, it would be a great fit with any number of teams out there. Despite the age, there's concerns there for sure. But Al Horford just knows how to play the game of basketball, and he could fit in seamlessly in so many places that I think, again, it's probably going to be the Warriors, but whoever gets him will be very happy they did.
Trevor, appreciate the time. As always, we'll chat soon.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right. That is Trevor Lane of Front Office Show and Lakers Nation. Make sure you check him out there. All right. When we get back, Steve Wiggity Weish, stop by Dukes and Bell. We'll let you hear that conversation. He is going to be with the Falcons this weekend, getting all the insights that he'll be sharing online and on the NFL Network. Excited for that. You'll hear that conversation next to close out the 8 o'clock hour. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. Oh, and guess what? Braves are losing. Yep. Well, you see, the thing is, Oren, this is exactly why I said what I said yesterday. Things can look so good so quickly, and then all of a sudden, you get a slap-in-the-face reminder of why you are in this situation. What situation is that? Well, it's the bottom of the fifth. Braves are down 5-0. Why? Because somebody named Davis Daniel got the start tonight. He pitched one other time this season, and he gave up 5 runs because he's Davis Daniel. That's what it is. That's what the situation is this year, y'all. We get high off of a game like last night where it's a nice, complete, tidy 9-5 victory over a Giants team that's trying to make the playoffs. And then you come back the next night and you're down 5-0. And that's been the roller coaster ride that has been the exact formula of the Braves 2025 season. Word for freaking word. One night you put up 9 runs, Baldwin has 6 RBIs. You win 9-5 to start the series. Nice little palate cleanser after dropping 2 out of 3 to the Yankees over the weekend. And then the next game, you're down 5-0 in the 5th inning. I mean, if that's not a tombstone definition of what the Atlanta Braves 2025 season has been, I don't know what else is. This is it. One game to the next. It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. Like, I mean, usually, you know, you're scratching your head, this, that, and the other. This one's pretty simple. You had to start some dude named Davis Daniel because everybody's hurt in the rotation and you had nobody else to go. So that's it. That's what you get. You are stuck with starting a guy who's not a major league caliber pitcher and you get less than major league caliber results. This dude's 28 years old. Minor league pitcher. That's what he is. This dude is not turning into the next Spencer Strider anytime soon. It's not happening. Again, who? Yeah, Davis Daniel. And you wonder why the Braves are down 5-0. This isn't because, you know, it's a pitch squeaked by here or a bad strike call there. This isn't a, man, the umps are against us tonight type of situation. No. It's because Oren Davis Daniel is Davis Daniel. And he's going to go out there and he's going to give up 5 runs because he's Davis Daniel. And he's not the following. Chris Sale, Reynaldo Lopez, A.J. Smith-Shawver, Spencer Schwellenbach, who are all not in the rotation right now. You don't have Austin Riley. Ozuna's hurt. It is what it is. Davis Daniel. That explains it, folks. It's so disappointing. It really is. But hopefully the Falcons won't be disappointing. And I don't think they will be. And Dukes and Bell got a chance to talk with one of our favorites, Steve Wyche. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, with you till 10. And the first thing the guys asked him was about this hype surrounding the Dirty Birds. What is going to be made of it? Will they live up to it or not?
Well, it should be. I mean, we've talked about it before. I mean, where are the excuses for the Falcons now, right? You know, their draft plan of drafting Michael Penix after signing Kirk Cousins, it's in effect. Michael Penix is the quarterback. You know, they go out, they add to their defense. They finally pay attention to edge rusher in the draft, and they get 2. The offensive line is good. The running backs are good. The receiver room is good. So where are the excuses? There aren't any. It is time to show up, let the process, let the plan play out, and see if it results in a playoff berth. And I mean, I think the expectations should be high. I think the fans should demand that this team win ball games because, frankly, when you look at the roster, when you look at the coaching staff, I'll say it once again, there aren't any excuses.
Yeah, man. I know we talked about Arthur and his patience and his loyalty to his coaches and front office, but I mean, 7 years going on, 8, Steve, without the playoffs, it's got to be. The pass rush, you like Ulbrich? Do you like the Ulbrich hire? Because the fans love the draft picks, and we do have a nice mix of guys like Leonard Floyd, some good pieces, but there's a lot of youth on this defense.
Well, there's a lot of youth, but so what? I mean, the Rams have their whole defensive front are players in the first and the second year, and you thought when they would lose, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer like Aaron Donald, it would be catastrophic. And they come out and they're one of the best defensive fronts overall in the NFL. So, you know, youth be damned. You got to come out and win ball games. You got a defensive head coach in Raheem Morris, who's very good at that. Jeff Ulbrich is very good at that. They've worked together before. I mean, you've got a stud like Jesse Bates. You've paid A.J. Terrell. You've got a guy like Caden Ellis inside. I mean, so at all three levels, they should be good. Now, can they all work together? Can those young pass rushers, even as a tandem, give you double-digit numbers, not necessarily individually, but make it uncomfortable for the quarterback? They need to, because I think the offense should be really, really good. A lot depends on Michael Penix and how he adjusts to what teams throw at him, especially the back half of the season. But I think defensively, if they can get something up front, this should be a good unit.
As far as Raheem, I know you guys go back. You've known him a long time. last year it felt like there were times, Steve, he made mistakes coaching, whether it was clock management, timeouts, etc. And we've said, hey, look, for the team to take the next step, Ra's got to be better in his second year as well. Tell me what you think about Raheem Morris and coming back and how much pressure you think is on him.
I don't think there's necessarily a ton of pressure unless, you know, they're looking at, you know, 2-15 or something like that. But I said there's no excuses. So there's legit pressure from that category. Again, they've addressed all of what's supposed to have been addressed, including getting their young quarterback ready. They've had a season plus to get him ready. He just needs the game experience. You know, and I think when you look at some of the things, you know, Raheem did last year that you consider shortcomings, I mean, did they lose a game because of poor clock management? No, they lost games for other reasons. The defense couldn't make a stop, things like that. So, you know, I think the finger will be pointed at him if things go wrong. But, you know, I've got a lot of faith in him. I've seen him coach really well as a coordinator. Right, but that's how we have to judge a lot of these young coaches right now. Ben Johnson's been great as a coordinator, but can he get the Bears to win? We'll see. So, I, you know, again, there's pressure, but I don't think it's a playoffs or bust type pressure unless it's just an utter disaster.
It is our man Steve Weiss, guys, from NFL Network. As Carl said, he'll be making the rounds. He'll be out there at Flowery Branch on Sunday, and you'll see him all over the NFL landscape. Steve, we were playing some sound bites last segment of Paul, I guess it's Michael Brown from Paul Brown's son, and Jerry Jones. It's almost like you got to keep the old guys off the microphone these days. Jeez Louise.
You said it, not me, but I'm not going to confirm or deny.
All right, I'll say this. The Browns have always been notoriously thrifty, but to sit there, I mean, that's the kind of stuff goes on behind closed doors. To sit there and say, well, this guy could be in jail. I'm not paying for that. It seems like such a disconnect from like the literally guys lighting cigars with $100 bills as NFL owners these days.
Well, my whole thing is, okay, so you just, besides talking about a potential mishap, you're undermining your personnel department, right? Aren't they supposed to be scouting guys' character, bringing guys into the room that are good in the community that aren't going to get in that type of trouble? It's just the rationale is I mean, I've got to be a little careful here, but, you know, in saying stuff like that, it's like, well, aren't you supposed to be drafting guys who aren't going to get in trouble? Are you more worried about the guarantee if he does than the 15 sacks and you him getting you to the playoff? We get to the playoffs in case he doesn't. Like, the fact that that's a priority over the positives is just really, like I said, it just kind of undermines the whole process of roster building and roster development.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is Steve Weiss, guys, NFL Network's chief national reporter. Again, he will be in Atlanta live from Falcons training camp this weekend as they kick off back together weekend. It's Saturday, 9 a.m. They're going all around the league, by the way. I saw all your cohorts, a buddy, Brian Baldinger. Everybody's got assignments. They're going to be all over the place, and Steve's going to be here in the A. Sunday at noon, by the way. Let's talk about some of the other storylines that are going on, man, already around the NFL. And, you know, I think when we start talking about the Eagles, and can they repeat, right? They've kind of gone under the radar, Steve. And you know, we talk about the Chiefs and the changes and Rashee Rice receiving his punishment, but nobody's really talking about the Eagles. Are they going to be as good as they were last year?
I'm so glad you said that, because we've talked about every team other than the Eagles, it seems like, except for when they just got their rings, right? And then some people coming out and you know, because Jalen Hurts wasn't making – top 10 list. Hey, if that's all your offseason drama, you're good, right? You're good. I think they are the team to beat in the NFC. And if they get home field again, I mean, I would expect them to be back in the Super Bowl. It's going to be tough. I think their division's tougher. I mean, I think Washington's not going anywhere. Dallas is a wild card. And I think some of the teams in the NFC, I think the Rams are going to be really good this year. You know, we don't know who's going to come out of the NFC North. I think the Lions, who've been a threat, they're weakened, you know, because they lost so many coaches and a couple really good players. So, again, I think that's a great point. And I do think, and all these people were saying, oh, Jalen Hurts is a system quarterback. You know how many people would take him right now because of what he does for so many elves? Hey, and real quick, guys, I'm going to be at Flowery Branch on Saturday.
Saturday. Okay.
At 9 a.m., not on Sunday. I'll be there Saturday.
Cool, absolutely. Man. Yeah, the Sunday is noon where they're kicking off the big together weekend right. across the NFL network. But yes, you will be there Saturday. Good call.
We're kicking it off Saturday.
Yes.
We're kicking it off Saturday, but we'll also be on there Sunday as well. We're both days.
Double your wickety wickety Weish fund, Carl. It's our man Steve Weish from NFL Network. We were talking about this the other day, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. I mean, everybody was like ready to throw Kansas City out the window because of how Philly dominated them with their defense. Figure they've made the adjustments on the offensive line. They're still the team to beat in the AFC. But is this the year? When does Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, Bills or Ravens, going to be able to grab that brass ring?
It's so tough. It's so tough because if one of them does, the other one doesn't. Right. And so and look, there's a couple teams that have really, in my opinion, that were good, but then absolutely improved themselves. And I think Denver is going to be a really good team. I mean, their defense was good. They've added some incredible pieces in Trey Greenlaw and Talano Hufanga. So we'll see. I mean, look, the Bills should be really, really good. Can they stop somebody when they need to? Right? Can they make that play when they need to? And of course, their nemesis has been Kansas City, and the Ravens. You know, you can't blame last year's playoff loss on Lamar. You know, it's just one of those things where if the ball bounces the right way, then it's going to have their opportunity. I don't think Kansas City is necessarily the bully team's fear going to Arrowhead anymore, but their defense is still so top notch that they're going to be in it as well, as long as 15 stays upright.
Yeah, that you're absolutely right. Steve, man, looking forward to this weekend, and certainly camp's getting underway, and your coverage and everybody on the network is going to be a fun time, and it gets us in the mood for some football as some of these storylines start to play out, man. Thank you so much for joining us again, guys. As he mentioned, 9 a.m., they're kicking things off on Saturday. Sunday will be more coverage, but that starts at noon on NFL Network. Thanks again, Steve.
Looking forward to seeing you guys.
You too, man.
That is the great Steve Weish there breaking it all down. We are going to be there live every single show from morning till night on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Morning Shift, Steak, Andy and Randy, Dukes and Bell at the Mall of Georgia. We will all be there. Exclusive interviews. I'll be replaying all the highs and the interviews from the day. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So until my show goes off the air at 10 o'clock, we're Falcons, baby, starting Thursday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. When we get back, yeah, we're going to spin the wheel again. This time, NFL edition. With camps opening up around the league, why not? Stock up, stock down. NFL edition coming up next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Odyssey app. Chris Thomas tonight.